We're back with the Queen of Tuesday Night and her guest.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show. Each week, we feature different topics concerning issues that sometimes can be difficult to talk about. These issues concern children and adults who may be autistic, have Asperger's, or have mental disorders of any kind. We will discuss law enforcement and how they interact with these persons. Now, let's start the show.
Good evening. Good evening. And welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show. Tonight, we are going to be talking about being prepared. Are you prepared for the unexpected? But right now, we're going to have, since this is the last Friday in this month, which is the Black History Month, we're going to have a Black History Movement right now.
Hello?
Yes.
How are you tonight?
We're fine. We're just waiting for our Black History session.
Okay. Well, good evening, honored guest, Ms. White, and co-host, Brother Coleman. I wanted to celebrate back Black History Month with an unsung hero that my grandfather used to talk about that always interested me in his law enforcement days. My grandfather was born and raised east of the Mississippi River in 1887, and his name was Jesse Marshall Barnes, but they also used to call him Jesse James because he was a crack shot. But he didn't allow anyone to call him boy because he was one to be reckoned with because he always carried a pistol and a rifle. So my father was also born in the South in Tupelo, Mississippi in 1923. And he was the second oldest of nine siblings. So he would always take us down to my grandfather's home, where my great-grandmother was a slave that lived with my grandparents. She was born into slavery, and she had performed as a slave, but was freed and ended up living with my grandmother, which is her mother, and my grandfather, in their home on the farm. My great-grandmother lived to be over 100 years old with my grandparents in Mississippi and was honored by Lyndon Baines Johnson with a letter. But every night that we stayed on the farm, Grandpa always had a campfire burning in the back, and my grandpa and uncles would always tell stories of the good old days. But Grandpa always kept a pistol on him and a rifle and a shotgun near by the door because he said you would never know who would come by unannounced. Elvis Presley was also born in Tupelo, Mississippi, and my father's younger brothers went to school with him. And they had some interesting stories about that. But the most interesting story that Grandpa told was that the one I remember the most was a U.S. Deputy Marshal called Bass Reeves. Bass Reeves was a South Black hero, and that name stuck with me because Grandpa stated he earned the respect from the white people. So this story is for celebration of Black History Month. Since this is the end, I wanted to air this short audio of the history of U.S. Marshal Bass Reeves.
For even those people old enough to remember segregation, it's not possible to fully comprehend that human beings were bought and sold. But that was the reality when Bass Reeves was born in about 1838. Because his mother was a slave, Bass was given the name of his owner, William Steele Reeves of Crawford County, Arkansas. He moved with the Reeves family to the area of Denison, Grayson County, Texas in 1846. Bass Reeves lived as an uneducated slave until the start of the Civil War, when it was believed that he accompanied his master's son George to duty, serving as his valet. Reeves County, Texas is named for Colonel George R. Reeves, who fought for the Confederacy under General Benjamin McCulloch, commander of the Indian Territory. Sometime during the war, either due to an argument between Bass Reeves and Colonel Reeves, or because news of the Emancipation Proclamation had reached his ears, Bass freed himself by escaping into Indian Territory. He lived among the Creek and Seminole tribes, learning to live off the land, honing the skills of sneaking up on his prey. By 1870, Bass Reeves was back in Crawford County, farming with a wife and the first four of his 10 children. He was first engaged with the U.S. Marshals to help deputies track and capture criminals wanted by the federal court for the Western District of Arkansas, which was based in Van Buren before moving to Fort Smith in 1871. In 1875, Judge Isaac C. Parker was appointed federal judge of the Western District. Parker's first order of business was to appoint James S. Fagan as U.S. Marshal, instructing him to hire a large force of deputy marshals to cover the vast jurisdiction of the court, which included the Indian Territories. With his knowledge of the territories and the ability to speak several of its languages, Bass Reeves was named a deputy U.S. Marshal. In an age when the average height of a man was 5.5 feet tall, Bass Reeves was a towering figure at 6'2". Yet stories tell of his ability to disguise himself, swapping the saddle to appear smaller, even dressed as a woman in order to catch the criminals he was chasing. Being a crack shot with either hand wasn't a bad skill to have either. Because he could neither read nor write, Reeves memorized his arrest warrant and was never known to arrest the wrong man. For all the 21 years Judge Parker presided in Fort Smith, Bass Reeves served as one of the most valuable deputy marshals, combing the 75,000 square mile jurisdiction that includes most of the present-day Oklahoma. In all of the service of the U.S. Marshals, a startling number of those killed in the line of duty died in this dangerous frontier. In newspaper accounts at the time of his death, it was noted that Reeves had never been wounded, although at different times his belt was shot in two, a button shot off his coat, his hat brim shot off, and the bridle reins which he held in his hands cut by a bullet. Bass continued as deputy marshal until retiring in 1907 at the age of 69. In his career, he arrested more than 3,000 felons and killed 14 men. Bass Reeves himself was tried and acquitted of killing a cook in his posse. In 1907, Bass Reeves lived in Muskogee, Oklahoma, and was serving as a municipal police officer when he died in 1910 at the age of 72. The Muskogee Phoenix newspaper contains the longest known written record of his life and extolled his character in several stories at the time of his death. Even at a time when African Americans suffered from the bigotry and lesser regard, the language of his 1910 obituary implies Reeves was shown respect. Bass Reeves, Negro, was buried yesterday, and the funeral was attended by a large number of white people, men who in the early days knew the old deputy marshal and admired him as a faithful officer and respected him as an honest man. Bass Reeves was a unique character, absolutely fearless and knowing no master but duty. The placing of a writ in his hand for service meant that the letter of the law would be fulfilled, though his life paid the penalty. In the carrying out of his orders during his 32 years as Deputy United States Marshal in the old Indian Territory days, Bass Reeves faced death 100 times. Many desperate characters sought his life, yet the old man, even on the brink of his grave, went along the pathway of duty with the simple faith that some men have who believe that they are in the care of a special providence when they are doing right. Bass is dead. He was buried with high honors, and his name will be recorded in the archives of the courts as a faithful servant of the law and a brave officer. And it was fitting that such recognition was bestowed upon this man. It was fitting that, black or white, our people have the manhood to recognize character and faithfulness to duty. And it is lamentable that we as white people must go to this poor, simple old Negro to learn a lesson in courage, honesty, and faithfulness to official duty. His burial was recorded in Agency Cemetery in Muskogee, but the location of his grave is unknown. Though this monument honors Bass Reeves, it can also serve to represent the other black men who worked for the federal court for the Western District of Arkansas, starting with George Winston, a black court bailiff who predated Parker and served him for 18 years. Other African Americans who served the court are Rufus Cannon, Bill Colbert, Neely Factory, Robert Fortune, John Garrett, Grant Johnson, Zeke Miller, Crowder Nix, and Ike Rogers.
I thought that was very profound how the white people addressed him as a proud, honorable black man in the times where racism was rapid. Bass Reeves set an example for not only himself, for his family, for the blacks to look up to, and I never read anything derogatory in regards to how he handled his capture of his prisoners, and he never shot a man unless a man pulled a gun on him. Bass Reeves was an example of what lawmen should be today. He gave you an opportunity to turn yourself in, and he didn't shoot you unless it was warranted. But there was one thing that Bass Reeves did that shook him up very, very tragic in his life. He had to arrest his son because they had a warrant for his arrest because he killed his wife that he caught cheating for the second time. And he didn't want the other deputies to arrest his son, which they feared that they were going to be chosen for that unpleasant task. So he visibly was shaken by this tragedy, and he demanded to take the warrant himself. So the marshal that he was working for allowed him to go get his son, which I believe that he said was the toughest, saddest manhunt he had was ever involved in. He found his son 2 weeks later and returned him back to Muskogee, where he turned him over to Marshal Bennett and sent to Leavenworth Prison at the end of the trial. But with a citizen's petition, an exemplary prison record, Reeves' son was pardoned and lived the rest of his life as a model citizen in Muskegon. That's the life of Bass Reeves, and he was posthumously honored and entered into the National Cowboy Hall of Fame in 1992, where they erected a statue of him on a horse with his dog in Fort Smith, Arkansas, where the story of the Lone Ranger was actually originated from. So that's my story of Bass Reeves, the first black U.S. deputy marshal.
And that was your grandfather, great-grandfather?
No. My grandfather knew of him.
Okay.
Because my grandfather, he was born east of the Mississippi, and Bass Reeves was born on the west of Mississippi. And the relationship was because of the Indian territory that my grandfather came from, as well as Bass Reeves was in the Indian territory and raised by the Indians when he left after smacking his master down. And he grew up with the Indians, and that's how he learned the language and was trusted by them, because the Indians had their own police, but they couldn't arrest the criminals on the Indian territory. And so he was allowed, as he was given the opportunity by Judge Parker, to assume jurisdiction to where that he can go arrest the criminals in the Indian territory, because there was no law governing that at that time.
Well, you know what, Officer Reggie, I appreciate your black history, and I'm sure all of the listeners appreciate it as well. We can discuss it, but right now I have a caller. I was going to take a break, but I have a caller, and we want to know what he or she has to say. Caller, your name, and where are you calling from?
Well, I'm calling from the Midwest, and I was going to thank Mr. Reggie, I think his name is, for the presentation on Bass Reed. And he hit on it on one issue that about the Lone Ranger. At some time, Bass Reed did have a Indian, and I believe he was Creek, that
right.
would accompany him. And people relate that to the Lone Ranger and Tonto, which probably was true. There's a lot of history that goes out. The story of Alice in Wonder, Cinderella was a story that was taken from an Egyptian princess named Rhodotis. And she went swimming in the pool there in Luxor, and a crow came down and took a shoe and dropped it off at the feet of one of the pharaohs. I think it was Amenhotep. Then there's another story about Alice in Wonderland. And there's a African group in Burkina Faso, right there where Ghana meets Burkina Faso, called the Dagara. And story tell it that one day a gentleman by the name of Melitoma Somme was out looking for firewood with his mother. And he seen a rabbit. And he went to chase the rabbit. And he chased the rabbit through the briar and the bush, and it came out into the open field. And on the other side of the field, he seen the rabbit sitting alongside of a little bitty man. And a man was in a chair. He asked Melitoma, "Why are you trying to hurt the rabbit?" And he could look past the man down in the hole, and it was a city in the hole. Same as the story of Alice in Wonderland. We learn something every day, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And you
well,
can
I
read about that.
I want to share something else with you, too.
Yeah.
I just found out, doing some research today, they have made a story, a true story, called Hell on the Border, about Bass Reeves. And it's shown
mm-hmm.
on Amazon and Netflix. Born of a slave, died a hero, became a legend.
Yeah, you're right. And you know something else, too, and I'm complaining about this. You have actors coming from other countries just because their skin is black. They want to play the role and character of native black characters. And I think myself that that's wrong. I think that those characters should be played by black Americans and not people that's coming from other countries that didn't even experience the type of experiences that Bass Reed experienced. And you have other cases, like the young lady that played Harriet Tubman from England. So that can get to be very, very peculiar. We need to have more of our own people from the United States that have those opportunities and take advantage of it. You see the same thing in scholarships, too. You have scholarships that specifically for black American, native black American students, because of their experiences, oppression, denial, and so forth. And you see other people coming from other countries because their skin is not lily white. They are applying for these scholarships and receiving them. And you see the students at Cornell complaining to the administrators that they were letting in on affirmative action children from Africa that never even experienced anything that would require affirmative action here in the United States. Now, I'm not hating on these people, but the thing is, you couldn't go to their country and participate in something that was made specifically for the native kids, you being from the U.S. Anyway, I'll leave it with that.
Okay. We appreciate
Thank you
calling.
Thank you very much.
Thank
You're
you.
Welcome. And now we'll take a break.
As an author, You understand the devastation of someone plagiarizing your work, but what if someone stole your identity? Protect yourself and your family with Identity Theft Protection. Services include credit monitoring, credit reports and scores from all three credit bureaus, social security numbers, emails, credit cards, bank account monitoring, and social media monitoring from Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. For more information, call 248-525-7680.
Has God called you to be a pastor or leader, but the men and women in your church won't let you speak because you're a female? Is the call to minister strong on your life, but you hesitate because you think the Bible tells women to be silent in the church? I'm Jory Micah, and I am here to tell you, sister, that together we can break the glass steeple. I fight and advocate for gender equality in the church, and there are others with me who are holding up the banner. Subscribe to my blog at JoryMicah.com for interviews, commentary, and uplifting words to give you the motivation to answer the call to ministry. Together, we can break the glass steeple and inspire all of God's children, men and women alike, to answer the call to ministry.
You just tuned in to another episode of Let's Talk About It with Jenny White. Join Jenny every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time for great guest commentary, interviews, and so much more right here on PJC Media.
And we're back to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show.
Okay, and we're back with the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show. Tonight our guest is Officer Reggie, and he's here now, and we're going to let him start and do what you got to do.
Okay.
Officer Robbins, okay.
The topic of the show tonight is, are you prepared for the unexpected? And what I meant by that was, we're looking at the unusual climate of weather that we've had, like especially in Texas. Most of the people in Texas have never seen that much snow, and I don't know how many years. But the question was, were they ready for the snow? And we find out that they weren't. So I have some thoughts and some tips. I'm not the expert, but I will share some thoughts and points that I experienced for myself and what I prepare to do when you lose power. There's a lot of alternatives that we have in case that we lose power in our homes, and I don't think most people take advantage of that opportunity, such as if we lose power in the wintertime, how do you keep your house warm? Well, there's several different options that you can do to keep your house warm, but you have to do it in a safe manner. I've heard of people using gas generators within their household, such as attached garage, where that the generator will emit fumes and cause carbon monoxide, which has killed people, which that has happened in Texas because it doesn't allow you to have fresh air because you're taking it and becoming afflicted with the poison of the carbon monoxide. So that tells me if you don't have a carbon monoxide detector, that was not giving you a warning that you are exposed to that. So a lot of people don't realize that a generator is supposed to be outside of your house, and you never run it in an enclosed space. And it's recommended that you always run it at least 20 feet away from your home and always direct the exhaust pipes away from your home. Therefore, the exhaust does not come into the home. But there's other safety measures that we can use, such as propane generators. Propane generators are used by 20-pound cylinders or 30-pound cylinders, up to 100-pound cylinders, or there's a tank that you can have installed, depending on the requirements of the city or requirements of where you live. But they also sell, in case you don't have the propane or you don't have the gas, they have a dual generator that does both purposes. It can convert to gas as well as propane. Then there's an inverter generator, which inverts DC power to AC, meaning that you can take this generator and operate it off a car battery, or you can operate it off solar panels. That would be a safer way of supplying you energy into your house, where it allows you to use electrical appliances as well. And then there's a smaller version of a generator called a gasless portable power and solar generator, which you can use inside your home. And that would help you to at least run an appliance or run a light or run anything that's of electrical. So here are some of the tips when you lose power at your house that you want to think about.
Okay.
You want to turn off. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I didn't know you. I thought you were finished. That's okay. Go ahead.
No. So one of the tips are that a lot of people don't know is also that if you have a natural fireplace at your home, I would always recommend people to keep firewood as a resource for heating your home in the event that you don't have a generator at that time. You don't want to use your stove because that's a hazardous situation. And you have to be careful when you burn it in your fireplace if you have not ever cleaned it or ever burned in it, because there's a creosote buildup on the walls of it that can start a fire if your fire flute is not cleaned. But there's a log that you can buy, which is about $15, and it's a creosote log that allows you to clean the walls inside the chimney if you haven't gotten your chimney clean. So that helps keep your chimney prepared for you to burn into without creating a fire. But remember, when you start doing things like that, you always want to make sure that you have, as I suggested, a CO2 carbon monoxide detector. I would suggest mounting one on each floor because that's one of the ways that they call the silent killer. I would suggest putting a fire extinguisher on each floor because therefore you don't have to run and find a fire extinguisher if you needed one in case you had a fire. So many people have used extension cords on heaters, and that's not recommended because they overheat and not have the fire capacity to hold that heat from the cord. And then you want to also include smoke alarms on each floor. That'll give you a warning if there's a fire. You want to keep flashlights available for everyone in your household with ample supply of replacement batteries. I suggest solar lanterns, which are like ran off of LED lights, and that's run off a battery that can last you for a week. Never burn candles. I never recommend burning candles because if you're not there monitoring the candle, your child, a pet, may knock the candle over, and now we have, what, a fire. So you have to be careful about that. A lot of things that people don't talk about is the security in your home. Predators prey on the opportunity that people don't work in light. So at night, you know that you don't have any power. How do you protect your home from vandalism or an attack or a home invasion? So it's a priority that you must think about ways of protecting yourself and your family. So you're going to have to figure out if somebody breaks into your home while you're in the home, what do you do? Well, you can't dial 911 because the phone system's not working. So you have to depend on your skills. This is where a lot of people may not agree with, but this is where a handgun may come in handy, or a rifle, or a shotgun. Now, a lot of people don't realize with these weapons of choice, you can use either bullets, you can use pellets, or you can have a BB gun. They will also be effective, and they don't know what's going to hit them, regardless of what them looking at the end of the barrel. All you want to know is that you want them out, not in. I would keep a knife always available for many uses. Then you can always use pepper spray, deer spray, or mace. Keep a baton, a nightstick, or a Louisville slugger bat. That can keep them out. And then the old stun gun or taser. That would probably be another alternative for you. And so we lost our communication when we have a power outage, so I recommend having two-way radios available. Say, for instance, that you don't have enough heat in the house, but yet your car is outside. So between the family, depending on how large your family is, a group of you may go out in the car and the other group stay huddled in the house. So the best way to communicate, because we don't have a phone system, I would use two-way radios. There's a difference in the radios when they have the different frequencies. One is VHF, which is called a very high frequency, and the other one is UHF. It's called ultra-high frequency. And the difference in the two is the VHF is suited for long distance, in and outdoor. The UHF radio is a higher frequency, but it penetrates through buildings, walls, or concrete. So I would pick the one that I'm going to use that would be more advantageous to my needs, which would be the VHF radio. And therefore, you have some form of communication between the two of you. Or, you know, each other. So, if any questions, we could talk about.
Okay, well, what I wanted to say about being prepared was, and I didn't go in your direction. I went into a different one because I was just trying to get some ideas. And one of the things I had read was someone was saying that if you are underprepared, a single mistake can derail your success in an instant. Being prepared can make the difference between your plans ending in failure or succeeding despite a bump in the road. One of the most important points to investigate for potential problems is your environment. Know where you live and what your area is prone to. Know the seasons and always have a plan in place ahead of time. Create a plan for each situation. One thing you can do is have 3 weeks of food and toilet paper around in case you can't get out of the house. Now, I noticed that in Texas, they were having some issues with the water. So it would have been nice, you know, if they had had water in the home. And, you know, the cases of water, that would have been one thing, being for prepared. And you'll probably do things differently in a wildfire than in a flood or a snowstorm. But if your car breaks down, make sure you have a charged up phone to call for help. And if necessary, well, it is necessary for you to have a spare in case you need one. And also, be friends with your neighbors. You never know when you might need them in case of a disaster. They may have to let someone know that you are missing so they can look for you. So if you have a tornado or something and, you know Juanita next door, she can be looking for you. I'm just saying, this is just something that I was going through. And if they're missing, well, let's say Juanita is not here. Check under the rubble or whatever, or an animal, if you have an animal, Okay. Well, I have another caller. Okay, caller, you're on with Officer
Reggie.
This
is me again. This is me again,
okay.
Officer Reggie. And you know what? I was talking to somebody about survival and what was going on in Texas. And these people, these are black folks. Ain't nobody got time to be doing all that stuff, preparing. So what you said is all right. But what I made a list, and I'm going to share it with you.
Okay.
For instance, for water, there's a device called a water bob, and it holds 100 gallons of water. It fits in your bathtub, and it has a pump on it that when you get ready to use water, in case it goes off, you can just pump it into your pots and pans and whatever. It costs $34.95 at Walmart. Gallon bottles of water cost as low as $0.39-$0.69 that you can stock up during the summer. And there's you can get these small generators from Target, I believe it is. And those generators, no, generator at Walmart, a 4,500-watt generator is $320. And use all the safety precautions that officers said. And you can get 1,000 watts for $130. And you can store gasoline. Now, you know what you can use in the house? Those ceramic heaters.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and they're cheap, too. They're not expensive. And I would advise people to get sleeping bags. And for $4.98, you can get those reflective blankets. You lay that down, put your sleeping bag on it with the shiny side up on the reflective blanket. And a sleeping bag will hold two, two kids or however. And they only $24 to $40. So you can store your ramen noodles, your Lipton tea. You can get some mugs with those immersible heaters that you can stick in there and heat your stuff up to where it's, hot. And it get you some survival bread, instant oats. Now, here's the thing. People are talking about folks don't have enough money to pay for that. You know those Remy and Yaki Wees that the women be running around with, going to the club in and everything? Those things cost $169 to $215. Everything I've mentioned don't cost that. Also, when they get their nails done, nails and pedicure between $25 and $40. The polish is between $40 and $170. And if you really want to look cute and have pink and white, it's $75 to $85. Now, if people would sacrifice and prepare for the times when you have to go into your survival mode, you never know. But it's always best to be ready than not prepared.
Absolutely.
Absolutely right.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
There's so many things that as you had mentioned earlier, Ms. Jenny, that every situation calls for different measures. So it's kind of hard to actually make a complete list because every situation warrants something different. I'm going to give you a good example about a person that got stuck in a car or couldn't get in their car. With the new cars today, we have those fobs. And the fobs, they have an emergency key. But the problem is a lot of the new fobs also control your burglar alarm. And for me, I learned something early about those fobs that I found out what battery it uses. And I always buy a couple extra batteries and keep them with me because I experienced I couldn't get in my vehicle one time because the fob didn't work. And then if you do get the door open, the other problem that you have is the alarm goes off. And you can't cut the alarm off without activating the fob. So my suggestion is that whoever has a fob should find out what type of battery they have and get an extra battery or two and keep them in your vehicle or keep them where that you can get to it. That's a suggestion there.
Okay, that's a good suggestion. If anyone else has a suggestion, you can state it. We don't have a problem. Everybody's able to get their voices heard. I'm going to take another break, and this is the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White
Autism
Show.
Autism affects 1 in 68 children, sweeping all racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic groups. Autism is a lifelong brain disorder that leads to untold challenges to the physical, financial, and social well-being of people with autism and their families. Resources are stretched thin. The Autism Alliance of Michigan, a collective voice for families, uses resources to help families battle challenges right here, right now. If you or anyone you know needs help navigating the autism journey, contact the Autism Alliance of Michigan today, 877-463-AAOM, or visit them online at aaomi.org.
Do you know a youth in need of a place to live? Have you always wanted to make a difference in the city of Detroit, but not known how? The answer to both of these questions is Covenant House, Michigan. Covenant House is a youth homeless shelter serving 18 to 24-year-olds in the city of Detroit with education, resources, job preparation, and so much more. If you'd like to learn more about these programs, please call 313-463-2000 or look us up on the web at www.covenanthousemi.org.
And we're back to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show.
Okay, and we are back with the Let's Talk About Jenny White Show. We're talking tonight about being prepared for the unexpected. And like I said, some people need to know this, and a lot of them aren't able to do that. Some people can't live below their means. They say that it's at best keeping your costs for the essentials like housing, transportation, utilities to a minimum, because if there's a time when you lose your job or, you know, maybe your health goes south, there's always, you know, backup that you could do if you live under your means. And I don't think, well, I don't know, but I don't think a lot of people do that. Maybe some do. But to me, it's a good idea. So you can start saving. And I heard somebody say one time that after you give your tithes to the church, then you put that same amount of money in your savings for you. So I guess it all depends on how much you're giving in your tithes. But, I mean, if you could give a nice amount to the church and then you're going to do that same amount for yourself, you can really go far and probably surprise yourself. Especially when those emergency things come up, and then you know, good to go. So I don't know if anyone has a question or would like to make a comment. You can press the 1 and you'll be streaming live with Officer Reggie. One thing I would like to say.
Hey,
that's my co-host. Hey, co-host, this is the first time I heard your voice this evening. How you doing?
Right. Good, good. How you doing, Officer Barnes?
Fine. How you doing, Brother Coleman?
Great, great, great. Yeah, I think another good thing to be prepared, you need some cash at the house.
That's true.
Because if you're not able to get to the bank or the ATMs aren't working, and all you know, you're depending on your credit card or your debit card, and you need cash, you know, a lot of places are only accepting cash now, you know. So you need to have a little cash on hand just in case. And, you know, with the Russians having hacked the SolarWinds system, and, you know, they've got viruses in a lot of different public and private systems, we're going to start seeing a lot of strange things happening. And today, you know, I experienced that where a large amount of money I had in my bank account disappeared.
When
I was checking it on. I was checking it online, and one minute it was there, and I was trying to make some transactions, and I kept getting error messages. You know, I had to download an upgrade to the banking system, you know, and so after I had done that, you know, I was leery to do it because I wasn't having any problems, you know, anyway. But I done the upgrade, and so then, you know, I went to do the financial transactions today and received two error messages. I had never received error messages, you know, from doing these transactions before. And then I looked and I saw that a lot of my money was missing, you know. And then I called the bank, you know, early in the morning. They had a 30-minute wait, so I figured I wasn't the only one. So by the time I was headed to the bank, I was going personally to the credit union. They had ended up picking up, and the lady said, yeah, we're having online problems this morning. But I also read an article stating that the Federal Reserve had encountered a system, a problem with their systems where banks can transfer money back and forth. So I think that the Russians are going to be playing havoc with a lot of our different systems, just trying to see what's going on and seeing what they can do and testing them out, just like the power grid went out in Texas. And back, I forgot what year it was, when the power went out
for us.
In the States. Yeah, it went out in the States. And so I think that we're going to be encountering a lot of different situations that we're not going to be prepared for. But, you know, I think Officer Barnes and the other caller gave a lot of good ideas to be prepared in regards to your water and how to heat your home in the winter. And I think, you know, we're going to have to really go back to some survival tactics. And some people are just so modern, you know, to the point where they've never had to live, you know, they've had all the modern conveniences. You know, they don't know how to act when things get a little inconvenient. So I think we're going to, you know, from time to time, have opportunities to get prepared, just like the people in Texas. But that was a disaster waiting to happen.
Well, it's still a disaster because I don't know if you saw that the electrical company has risen the pricing on electricity.
To cover. Yeah, some Yeah, some bills are $7,000.
Yeah, I heard, well, you know, they're trying to bill the consumers $50 billion. And I was looking at a news program that said either the residents or the consumers are going to have to pay, which is pretty much one and the same, you know, because they're staying in an unregulated state. And the governor has appointed all the people to the, you know, to the Energy Commission, you know, ERCOT in Texas. And so, you know, they give him millions and millions of dollars, you know, to keep it deregulated. And so they're in a rock and a hard place right now. So it sucks to be in Texas.
Yeah, also, I also learned, too, that a lot of the homes, because of the lack of installation on the piping, that they had ended up losing the protection of the pipe water in their homes, such as I think most of them were copper pipes. And you know that a lot of people are not aware that anytime your house goes below a certain temperature, your pipes will freeze. The best way to do any pipe with water in it, first of all, is cut it off at the shutoff valve. Second, open up all your lines in your house so the pipes would drain and have a way of escaping out of the pipe. Otherwise, it's going to bust in the weakest link of the pipe, such as the joints. Sometimes some joints are not, you know, soldered that well or ready to break because the water can not flow. It just expands. So that could be a problem for a lot of people getting repaired. That's another problem they're going to face. And then, of course, we also understand that the insurance. A lot of people have cut corners thinking they don't need the insurance, so they either cut back on insurance or didn't renew the insurance or couldn't afford the insurance. So now the responsibility is back on them. That's another issue that they're going to have to experience. And I think we all have that problem today because of the rising cost of inflation. Another thing that we didn't talk about is that a lot of people have a vehicle, and I've always was taught to never let your gas tank go below half. So I think that's a critical part of survival, too, because if that's your means of transportation, say you had to leave your house because it got so cold you couldn't stay there and you had an opportunity to go somewhere else. Well, like Brother Coleman said, if you don't have any cash money and you need some gas, how do you get it? Just charge cards aren't working.
Yeah, I was also wondering what happens if you're riding around in a Tesla, you know, or one of these other electric cars, and you don't have the ability to charge your car up. You better bring your bike out, huh?
Well, it's going to be kind of hard to do that in the snow.
Oh, that's a good point.
Again, here we have another issue, and that's where a lot of people don't see the value in a generator. Now, I know that the whole house generators are not affordable to everyone. But if you're going to live in your home, it's an investment at some point in time, especially if you experience a lot of power outages in your area. So it may be advantageous because I think of other things. Like my father, he lived on a respirator until he died. What happens when a person is dependent on an oxygen machine to breathe and they have no power? That could be a critical devastation to someone because if they don't have the means of getting support for that medical equipment, that could be the difference between life and death for them.
So a lot of times we don't value what we need and prioritize the items in a certain order that are, you know, priority. So those are the kind of things I think people don't think about until it happens. You know, I'd rather be proactive than reactive.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, being proactive will definitely, you know, have you, you know, being more prepared than the person that is reactive, because that's the person that's going to get to the grocery store when all the shelves are empty. And the person that's in that long line at the gas station because their car's on E. So and during the conversation, that made me think I need to keep my vehicle closer to full than empty. You know, my wife, you know, her car gets to half a tank. She wants to fill it up. You know, I'm used to, you know, I drive it to a quarter or down to the light come on. Be like, oh, I forgot I need gas.
Okay. We got a Texan here. We have a caller. Hi, caller. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Hi, everybody. This is Terry from Texas.
Hi, Terry.
Well, hey, Terry.
We're glad you're coming. Go ahead.
I haven't been privy to your conversation. I've been in a class. So I dipped out to see if there was anything that I could add to, I'm sure, your already poignant conversation.
Well, we want to know about your bill, your utility bill. How's that coming?
Oh, I have a fixed rate, so nothing has changed on my end with the company that I'm with, and I don't anticipate anything changing. I was very fortunate during the ice storm here. I have a gas fireplace and a gas stove, so... Growing up in Detroit, my mom has taught me how to survive, and I did not miss a meal. I had a hot shower every day. It was different for me, a different experience than it was for a lot of people who are not familiar with the cold.
Yes. Okay. Well, I appreciate your time.
Well, you do have a fire extinguisher mounted on each floor, right?
I have a fire extinguisher, absolutely. And I was very cautious with how everything played out because anything, I mean, there were a lot of people who died of carbon monoxide poisoning in their homes, their cars trying to get heat in the garage, even just, you know, going into the car to charge their phones because, of course, they had no electricity inside and leaving the car running. And it's, a lot happened, a lot of fires. It was tragic because you found a lot of older people who maybe live alone, who died of hypothermia. It is unnecessary.
Right, and that's what we were talking about earlier, about the carbon monoxide detectors, that people fail to realize that carbon monoxide is a silent killer. Also, smoke alarms. A lot of people, you know, they think one is suffice, but it's not. I mean, I'm not saying I'm paranoid, but I have one at the top of the stairs and I have one at the bottom of the stairs. I'd rather be over cautious than under cautious, because sometimes, I mean, there's a device that may work and may not work at the time that you need it.
Right.
So. Have an extra one, I don't think will hurt you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we thank you, Miss Terry, for getting out of your class and calling in to speak with us and let us know how it's going. Do you guys still have snow?
No. It lasted for maybe 3 days, and it was a good smattering of snow. We usually don't get enough to make a snowman, but this time we made the snowman, his wife, his mistress, you know, some children. So it was pretty bad. And
that was funny.
Well, that would make a good Christmas card for next year.
Yeah, it was. And we don't know how to drive in snow. We don't have, our cars are not winterized. We were just totally unprepared. And for them to have said that the power grid was ready was a lie. It was not ready. It was not winterized. And for our governor to say that the renewable energy was the reason we fell into the darkness, that was a travesty for that information to have been out, because it was a lot of the natural gases that froze over, the nuclear. Renewable energy is such a small percentage. It's only, let's say, what, 13 to 25% of what we use here in Texas. So that was not the cause of any of the blackouts. They had to do the blackout so that there was not a catastrophic blackout. Ours was rolling. So we had heat for about 4 hours, and then we'd be in the darkness for about 4 hours. So we kind of had to segue and take turns. And it just, I had a friend whose pipes burst, and she's still dealing with that, and the insurance and the adjusters. And it's just,
oh, wow.
Situation, and it didn't have to happen. People were without water. We had a boiling alert where if you did drink something out of the faucet, you had to boil it first. And of course, how are you going to boil it if you're in a blackout? Well, if you didn't have a gas stove, you had to wait until your 4 hour turn when the lights came back on. So a lot of people, their food wasted. Some people did not have the luxury of having the rolling blackout. They were in total darkness for days. And so the grocery stores were inundated with people the days that they could get out. It was a bad situation for the people of Houston. And I would say that the people that we trusted with our well-being let us down.
Well, the problem, too, is in our society, we're living in a right-now society. You know, and people want us to live our whole life in one day, not worrying about tomorrow or anticipation of preparation for the next day. That's mm-hmm. what the problem with the society is. You know, we'll deal with the problem when it comes. And that's where you're at right now, Ms. Terry. We're going to deal with the problem as it comes. So now you, this unfortunate, put people into a position where that they don't know which way to turn at this point. Especially the elders.
Mm.
Okay. Well, appreciate you.
No worries.
Oh,
it's good to hear.
Karen.
That's off the burn?
Yes.
Hey. And is that Maceo Coleman as well?
Yes, ma'am.
I bet this was a good one. I'm sorry that I missed it.
It is. Well, glad you came and participated.
Right.
Yeah.
And
on me that made me feel.
What was the temperature today?
I think we were in the high 60s. So I pretty much had on just a light sweater and
okay. Yeah. Well, you don't have to tell us, you know, what you're wearing.
That's terrible. You yo-yo like that is touchy, and it could really cause illness. And you know what? We're very cautious with seeing people who are sneezing or coughing. I was in a store today, and I looked at that guy like, oh, you know, you need to walk out.
Right. Yeah, COVID.
Oh, you got to be careful. But thank you so much for having me. This, I'm sure, again, was a wonderful conversation, and I'm sorry I missed it.
Okay.
We'll get all right,
next
all
right.
Time.
Right.
Yeah, you can listen to it pre-recorded.
You know what? That is absolutely
right.
True. Well, thank you so much.
iHeartRadio. Yep. YouTube. Whatever. And go to India. We're over there now.
Okay. Well,
okay.
Thank you so
okay.
much. You guys. Have a good weekend.
Okay. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Miss Jenny, I wanted to know if Miss Lucy is back on the, listening tonight, because I have an answer for her in regards
Miss
to
Lucy?
Yes, I am.
Hello, Miss Lucy. How are you?
Yes. Just full of ears. Nothing but ears just tonight. And I
okay.
wanted to make a comment, but I did. I was hoping you would remember the question I asked you.
Oh, yes. I was very interested in finding an answer for you. And because it was ironic that you asked that question, because a lot of people think that black officers dominate the police department, which is not true. The majority of the police departments are made up of white officers opposed to black police officers. And most black police officers are working in the urban cities as far as numbers. And we have to always remember that the black police officers represent the community. So there's a lot of issues in hiring black police officers to work within the community, because a lot of them do not want to become police officers. And that reason is because over the years, the system has targeted the urban residents because they are predominantly controlled by the white police officers. So they are always becoming the target. And so that makes young black individuals, female and male, not want to be part of a system where they feel it's too much racism involved, and that the disparity is how they're going to get a fair shake. How are they going to be able to do the job without being criticized or ridiculed for doing what is right for their own community? Because you got to remember, too, that the supervision is more white than it is black when it comes to control. So, to be honest with you, black police officers have a tough time just doing their job and trying to stay in the black and not the red all the time, if you understand what I mean by that. So it's hard to help your own people when your own people don't trust you too.
That's true.
So to answer your question about black police officers killing whites more than whites killing black is false.
This one person that said per capita, the black police officers kill more white people than the white are killing the black. And I say that's something that's not even heard of.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was fake news.
Right. Think about it. Most black police officers work in urban areas. They don't work in suburbs. And if they worked in the suburbs, that's where they would encounter more white persons in their area. Not more black. So if they started killing white people, I think you would know that would be national news.
You would be. This person was trying to say that they were trying to justify a lot of the killings that have happened to our young black men. And this person told me, she said, you know, per capita, black officers kill more white people than anything. I say, you out of your mind. That's one unspoken rule. We haven't forgotten that in slavery. You gotta just go out and shoot a black or white person. You don't.
I think
really
the repercussions is gonna be worse than what the crime was.
Say it again.
I think that they would make an example out of that black police officer too, because they're not gonna allow that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still in control whether people want to realize that or not. I mean, black police officers can only do so much without being labeled, without being ridiculed, without being prosecuted. I mean, I'm looking at a case right now where in St. Louis, Missouri, that a black police officer was undercover and got whipped by several white police officers, just won a $5 million lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
So So the problem was the police officers that were whipping him also knew him.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like a black police officer will get away with shooting a lot of white people? I don't think so.
No, I mean, no, so. You won't. You really won't. So, yeah.
So I hope I answered your question.
More, you did. And thank you so much, Officer. Reggie, for that information. Thanks very much for that. I also am thinking about what we're talking about tonight, being safe. You know, we as, especially in our community, I remember when I was coming up, my father, you know, we were very poor, like, and we, you know, it wasn't a case of always being ready. You just lived so close that you had to always be ready for nothing, no matter whatever happened. You know, like my mother, she started like to can, so she canned food. And we had all these canned goods on the shelf, you know, in the mason jars and things.
Right.
And she just learned how to can, and it was just on the shelf. And for about 2 years, I remember when my money was very, you know, on Eisenhower, you know, we just didn't have. So we could go downstairs in the basement, because canned goods last, get a can of corn, a mason jar of corn, and heat it up. You know, we had a pot-bellied stove, you know, because it seemed like half the month you had the electricity, and the other half you didn't have it. We had the candles, and then we had the pot-bellied stove. We would heat up the food, eat it, and run on back to school. It was always a time of being prepared no matter what.
Right.
And we had that resource. They thought like that. Black people didn't lean on the supermarkets, and they always used to have a garden. They would have some beans and some greens in there and put some whatever on it, and they would, you know, that's the way we live, you know. We lived in a situation where no matter what happens to the outside, you had something to, you know, to feed your children and things like that.
Well, that
I remember
was
this one
because
time.
Of the village, too, the community that you
Beg
lived in. That was because of the village, too. I mean, you can go down the street to Mrs. Jones' house and get an egg or a cup of sugar or
yeah.
whatever you needed. You would share in the community.
Yeah, and even in the – I remember my father – now, he came from down south. He used to like chop and he used to cross ties or whatever, you know, those long wooden boards or something else. We didn't have any money for it. He used to be cold and bring by the coal and dump it. That had a coal furnace, like, or dump it in the window on the side. Okay, there was no money. There was no this. And so my father, he just went off for a while. You know, just using my eye. And next thing I saw, he comes home. He had found the old telephone pole and chopped that thing up. And we lived off that and kept warm off of it. We could eat off of it, you know, we heat the stove and things like that. You know, you had to find a way to make it. There was nobody to run to. I think we have taught our children to be so dependent, you know, that you're supposed to know you have food in the house for your family, you know, to cook and you know, serve up your food where you and your kids are always could eat. I know I tell my daughter, she likes to go out and buy all the time fast food. I say, listen, you're wasting your money doing that. You know, I try to tell her, you know, my kids don't like that. I say, oh, they'll eat it, you know. Push up, they will eat it, you know. But we like to rely on the government, rely on this person, rely on this to give you something. We didn't do that coming up. Whatever was in that house, that's what you had.
Right.
In fact, somebody else's house looks like you want to eat some of the food, your mother give you that look. What do you mean? You know, no one. They give you that. What do you mean? You better not eat this, you know. No, thank you. You know, all of it. But we learn to be self-sufficient that way. And I guess it's something we haven't taught our children, or they just don't want to learn, you know. And when someone else is feeding you, it's always giving you something, you don't know how to strive for yourself. You know, we want to do something wrong, you know, but to really make it for yourself. I was thinking of the Y2K movement. We know when the change of the whatever the century or whatever you want to call it. And so I went out and I bought a lot of dog food. I bought water and bottles and stuff like that. And then nothing happened, okay? Well, praise the Lord. And I had taken those big water things I bought. I put it in the freezer, down in my big freezer in the basement. Then when we had that blackout that was all over, I said, oh, boy. And my son kept saying, Mama, You're not supposed to be upset. Don't be upset now. I went downstairs. You know, that's when I was in my home, because I do not like living in an apartment. You can't do a lot of things. So what I did was I went downstairs and bottom of the freezer. I pulled this big thing out that was frozen, but I let it sit out and it started to melt. So we had some water. Then I do not like electric stoves. I like gas stoves, because even if the electric is off, you can light the stove with the match as long as the gas is on, you know. And so I was able to cook like that. Then I bought a lot of smoke. I like smoked meat, because even in your freezer, the smoked meat will last even if your freezer give out, you know, and things like that. Mama, don't worry about this and don't worry about that. And I looked at it, I said, boy, you don't even know, you know. And then you had your barbecue pit. That was so, like our co-host said, Colby, you got to have some money. Because when I went to the store, he had a generator. He said, but I can't you can't use your car. He was selling water, and they were selling at such a high price. But I bought some water. You know, I bought little things and stuff like that. But you should have stuff on yourself that will keep, where you can feed your family and stuff, you know, and be self-sufficient. We have to teach them to be more self-sufficient. They don't want to listen now. They, like he said, you live for just a moment. But you have to start thinking differently now, since so many things are happening. You have to start thinking differently.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that dry goods like beans and rice and crackers and noodles, I mean, if you're hungry, you'll eat it.
Oh, that's most definitely. Most definitely. I remember the church, big church that, now usually these buildings are supposed to have a generator built onto the church, you know, and stuff. And so, but the problem was, well, I know Bishop said this. He said, we have a generator built onto the church, but we need some gas to start it or do something. But then when you go to the gas station, the pump is run by some type of electric, and you can't get no gas, gasoline or whatever
right.
It was. I don't know the whole setup. I said, this is crazy. You know, like my sister, they live out in the sticks. They got they have the oil pan, the oil gas, oil heat. So then her husband put on a wood burning heat that can also supplement. But then it runs by electricity. I say, you done defeated your purpose. You know, if the electricity is off, you can't start that either. You know, so you know it's six in one, half dozen the other. You know, and so but they have a wood burning. In fact, they're gathering wood now for the winter where they are. You know. But I said, that don't make sense. You know, you have to start it with electricity. No, that don't make sense at all, you know. But like you say, we should have a generator. But in the apartment, a lot of things you can't do in an apartment. Like
right.
Here, there's no generator on this apartment building. Some of the senior citizens, they do have generators, but that's just emergency, you know. But in an apartment, you're very vulnerable in an apartment.
Well, you
can
have
like that, you know?
A gasless generator, like a solar generator that generates power from the sun, and that doesn't violate any rules or regulations, and it's a lot safer. You can run
you can put an apartment
with it, depending on the size of it. You can run an appliance. You can even run a refrigerator off those solar generators.
Mm-hmm. That's something to look into then, because you feel really vulnerable in an apartment. But so
well,
you're like everything is electric? No.
Well, that'll help you out, because what it'll do is it'll also allow you to charge your phone. It'll allow you to run some lights. I mean, I just recommend you just go Google search and put in solar generator. And you can see them on Amazon, and they vary from $100 to $1,000 or more.
Mm-hmm. A solar generator.
Yes, a solar generator.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's the thought. I'm going to definitely look into it, because anything can happen, you know. And
all the time.
Anything can happen.
I recommend a solar generator, too, because what it'll do for you is if you have a breathing machine, say you need that.
Your
power went out. Anything that operates electrical for any medical device would be recommended to anybody to have some type of device that can continue their choice of life.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. That is interesting. Thanks so much for that information. And thanks for that. Remembering my question.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Thanks, okay.
Because
I was really upset at that. Thanks, Ms. Jenny White.
You're welcome. Thank you. Okay. Officer Barnes, this has been a great show. I appreciate you. I appreciate all the information. And I really liked your Black History segment idea.
Well, what I love about that gentleman was it's a history that was is untold. Now it's being told. And the thing is, they could not find anything wrong in what he did back in the days to the day to discredit him for his service.
Okay. Well, is there anything you'd like to leave with us before we go?
What I would like to leave with us is that we have to stop depending on other people to take care of our problems. We have to learn to be proactive and not always reactive or always waiting on somebody else to fix our problem. So, in other words, you need to prepare for the unexpected.
That's
true. Listening to others and their problems, and learn from others before it becomes your problem.
Good advice. Mr. Coleman, would you like to have something to say before we go?
Yeah, just keep a couple dollars at the house. That's all.
That's a good idea. Thanks for that. Okay, and before we go, I'd like to say, life has knocked me down a few times. It showed me things I never wanted to see. I experienced sadness and failures, but one thing for sure, I always get up. So with that being said, I would like to say thank you to all my listeners. I thank those that asked questions, made statements, made comments. I thank my guest, my co-host, and Terry from Texas. And I just appreciate those of you that called. You didn't say anything, but you were there and you listened. And I appreciate you too. So having said that, I'm going to say good night to all. Keep your mask on. Keep your distance. And please be safe out there, because this pandemic is no joke. And with that having said, this is the end of the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show. Good night.
Good night.